Hello again. This is another Mind, Body, Soul episode with your host, Ike Feldman from IkeTheGon.com. You can find some of the stuff I create, audio or video wise, on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. At IkeTheGon, IkeTheGon. UFC 248 in the books. Another great pay-per-view card. I don't know if the fighters feel the energy around a pay-per-view card because there's more eyeballs, there's bigger fights around them, before them, after them. It's bigger arenas, it's a bigger presentation, there's more promotion surrounding the event, there's more media obligations surrounding the pay-per-view events. There's champions involved, but as of lately, and I'm talking about the last 5 years, maybe once a year there is a pay-per-view, at most twice a year there's a pay-per-view that doesn't hit in terms of having entertaining fights and having wild outcomes. Maybe the changing of the guard with belts or fight of the years. Few and far in between is it that UFC pay-per-view events do not deliver. And UFC 228 delivered. Great job by Neil Magny. Picking himself off the ground, dusting himself up, coming back against Li Jingling and getting a huge underdog victory. He was on the shelf for about 14 months and he was the underdog in this. He's been a very solid contender in the UFC's 170-pound division. And he showed why. He had a huge bump in the road in his last fight against Santiago Ponzinibbio. And he bounced back in a big way. He's a Team Denver guy, Team Elevation, Team Easton guy. Coached by Elliot Marshall. Teammates of Corey Sanhagen, Curtis Blaydes, Alistair Overeem. It was a huge win, and mixed martial arts is ever evolving, just like other showcases of physical talent, like football and baseball and basketball. And it's fun when you see somebody come back and not give in to the quote-unquote myth of cage rust, but to come back strong and prove the doubters wrong, prove the bookies wrong, and get a huge win and make another climb towards the title. Came out that Neil Magny has 15 wins in the UFC's welterweight division. The greatest welterweight of all time and a top five mixed martial artist of all time in George St. Pierre has 19 wins in the UFC's welterweight division. Neil Magny has 15. Amazing. And great job by Neil. Staying strong, staying confident, not giving in to any demons or temptations, and staying on the right path and the path of success and positivity and keeping his focus when I'm sure he faced a ton of adversity. And just thinking of this now, Neil is a former military member, and who knows if that certain discipline that he learned from being part of the military, not sure exactly what division, whether it was Army or Naval or Air Force, but he has some sort of next level discipline that helped him ride this long stretch, which can welcome adversity and can welcome depression and darkness. But great job by Neil fighting his opponent as well, coming back for a huge win and climbing the welterweight ladder. Another huge victory, a knockout victory. Beneil Dariush got into a bit of a firefight with Dracar Close. And Dracar has been known to just point to the canvas and wing punches, get into firefights, and hope he comes out the other side of it. Dariush is historically known for being a very good grappler. Josh Thompson, the former MMA fighter and now MMA broadcaster, is hysterical when he describes Dariush. He says he looks like he's, I don't know, maybe a soccer player or a tennis player with that salt and pepper comb over hair. And he proved that he plays something a little more rougher than tennis or soccer by coming up big with the knockout of the night. Huge left hand rocked Dracar. Dracar looked like he was out on the way down before he hit the floor. His eyes were rolling back, his mouthpiece was falling out, his body went limp. It was a big win for Dariush, and he climbs his respected 155 pound weight division and will look for bigger challenges. The fight after, the greatest women's fight of all time and one of the best mixed martial arts fight of all time. Unbelievable. Weili Zhang, current champion at 115 pounds, fought and beat barely the former five-time strawweight champion in Joanna Jędrzejczyk. What a fight. Anybody who questioned Joanna's heart, her mindset, her will, where her focus was her celebrity too big? She put all those doubters to rest because she came to fight and she won on one judge's scorecard. Weili Zhang just edged out Joanna Jędrzejczyk because of the damage and the hematoma that she forcefully put on the forehead of Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And if you Google Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I'm sure there's a photo or side-by-side photos of the before fight and after fight photos of Joanna's forehead. A hematoma is an eyesore. It's hard to look away. And it's a break in the, I believe it's a broken vein that just pours blood into the affected spot. And Joanna had two of them. She had one on one side of the forehead, and then Zhang punched the other side of the forehead, and then it filled up all across her head. And it's a tough sight, but she showed no she wasn't going to stop. She showed no inkling of stopping. She kept trotting forward, chopping down the leg of Zhang, countering, jabbing, hooking, crossing the face of Zhang. Yuana took her warrior spirit to another level, and it's tough because what does she do next? She's been caught in a tough spot career-wise. She was the longtime strawweight champion, and then Rose Namajunas put a stop to that twice, and then Joanna moves up to 125 pounds and is outclassed by Valentina Shevchenko. And then she builds herself back up, beats Michelle Waterson, and then she gets the title fight. This is one of the biggest fights in MMA history, and she shows up, but it just wasn't enough. She took too much damage. She did not stop punching and kicking throughout the five rounds, even when her forehead tripled in size. Joanna did not stop. Valiant effort, unbelievable will, incredible. Now, don't mistake my words for Joanna. Weili Zhang is a true warrior in her own sense. She's a Chinese fighter. She was pulled out of China for safety concerns. Went to Abu Dhabi to, I guess, have a pit stop before she was flown into the States. And all along the way, she kept her composure. She trained as often and as hard as she could throughout the travel. And she showed up on fight night. She delivered and battled through all the adversity and showed why she is the strawweight queen, and deservedly so. I hope the UFC and Dana White takes care of those warriors, not even just by compensating them with money, but with respect. I hope in whatever card they return on, they are a corner piece for the card. They could even headline a pay-per-view. Unbelievable fight. Unbelievable. It was wild. You see the first round, the second round, you're like, okay, something's going to teeter off. Something's going to give. Somebody's going to coast, try to recover. Nobody coasted. Nothing gave. They both kept smashing bones against each other. And the ferocity that they were throwing throughout the five rounds in 25 minutes was incredible. And this is Zhang's first five-round, 25-minute fight. Joanna has done at least five of them. Rose, Waterson, Valentina, I believe of Claudia Gadelha, Jessica Andrade. She's done many five-round fights, and she's experienced and knows when to hit the gas and how much she has left. It's probably why she was able to fight through her injuries in the fight, because she knew how to conserve herself and maintain her energy level and her power and her speed. And Zhang has never been in those waters, those fourth and fifth rounds. But she showed extreme heart. When Joanna was coming on in the fourth round, Zhang replied with a bunch of heavy strikes of her own. Unbelievable. That's all I can say. It's getting a ton of respect and its credit. But the more we're going to look back and the more that cards fall off the calendar and events pass, we're going to look back and know that we saw something special. So, another hat off to these guys, these women. Unbelievable. The main event, not so much. Yoel, don't know what he's thinking. Adesanya, I know exactly what he's thinking. He speaks his mind. He was playing it safe. Or excuse me, he was coming out ready to counter. And then when he engaged and got clipped by Yoel, he goes, this counter game is a high-risk poker game that I'm not willing to play. He switched it up to checkers. Keep it simple. Chop down the tree. The tree did not fall, but chop down the tree. And keep swinging that axe. Yoel, on the other hand, I don't know what he was thinking. He comes out and blames Adesanya instead of looking in the mirror and saying that he didn't fire off or use his wrestling and put the fight in his world, in his range. You got to take the belt. You got to beat Thiago Santos or Dominic Reyes. You got to at least try to earn the respect of the champion and the respect of the promotion and the fans and show that you want to be champion. Don't blame Adesanya. He has the belt. He can outpoint everybody if he does it for the next 10 straight fights and be the greatest middleweight of all time. But your chances are becoming fewer and fewer and fewer. He's 42 years old and he was more worried about the antics and trying to get in Adesanya's head. And maybe he thought that his presence alone would get Adesanya to be nervous. Adesanya was very methodical, cool, and calm, and did not give in to Yoel. And that first 2 minutes where nobody threw a strike and Yoel was standing still, that definitely helped Adesanya focus more. That it exemplified how scary Yoel is, that he's so confident in his ability and his power and his speed that he can sacrifice a couple of minutes of the first round of the biggest fight of his life. And I think that just was a realization for Adesanya and a wake-up call that any nerves that he was feeling about the first couple of minutes swept away, and especially after he got tagged by or cracked by Yoel later in that first round. He knew exactly what he was playing with. Somebody who was trying to bait him. Somebody who's overly confident in his abilities. And someone who possesses some of the best abilities and talent we've ever seen in a cage. And Adesanya respected him. Yoel just, I don't know. Doesn't faze him, it seems. It doesn't faze him. And maybe he is that confident that he can just knock out a Kelvin Gastelum or a Jared Cannonier and just be one or two more fights away from a title fight. But according to history and logic, he's very close to the end of the road. I mean, he's doing backflips and back handsprings at 42 years old. He looks phenomenal. Dan Henderson and Randy Couture fought into their mid-40s. Yoel's 2 or 3 years away from there. And I don't know. I guess he lives a very smart life physically and takes care of himself. And he believes he'll be back. I believe he truly believes that. So we will see. As far as Adesanya, it's Paulo Costa next. It's going to be a slugfest. It is the Anderson Silva Vitor Belfort 2.0 fight. It is a slugger, a powerful genetic slugger freak on the feet versus a silky smooth magician on the feet in Adesanya. But like I said to begin this episode, overall, the pay-per-view delivered. And it shows you that the UFC stacks these cards nicely, because the undercards had fantastic fights. The co-main event was one of the greatest fights we've ever seen. And it kind of kept us all at ease when the main event didn't deliver. So, moving forward, the show goes on. Weirdly, the show goes on. UFC Brazil is tomorrow, and Kevin Lee will fight Charles Oliveira. Damian Maia will face Gilbert Burns. Johnny Walker will face Nikita Krolov. Renato Moicano will face Demir Hadzovic in front of no fans. Sure, everybody will be able to tune into the app and stream the fights, but the coronavirus has now crossed over into the UFC. We've seen its effect on one championship in Bellator. One is conducting their fights in front of no fans. Bellator is postponing this weekend's event. And now the UFC will continue on and carry on with their fights. They're saying they're going to do this fight in front of no audience, and they've prepared the next couple of cards to have the fighters come to Vegas. They're going to test the fighters for fevers or for sickness. And they better, because fighters are under a lot of physical stress on fight week. They're cutting a lot of weight. The nerves can get to some people. The anxiety. The just absolute frustrations of depleting yourself. No water. No sugars, no carbs. Your body's eating itself, and you have to lose weight while it's eating itself. You have to double down on the effort. But Kevin Lee is in a weird spot. Kevin Lee is one of the most intellectual and cerebral fighters in the UFC, and has so many emotions storming inside of him. He wants to be a spokesperson. He wants to be a feared champion and respected champion. He is well-spoken. He's smart. He comes from a tough background. He is an elite fighter in the UFC. Supremely talented. Supremely smart. Highs of all highs, fought Tony Ferguson for a title, lost to Rafael dos Anjos in a different weight class, has had weight cutting issues, and we find Kevin Lee in another Kevin Lee situation, a situation that somebody with maybe clearer focus and more tunnel vision could get through this, but Kevin Lee was maybe distracted by the virus, being distracted by the travels and fighting on the road and fighting in somebody else's home. Kevin Lee missed the 156-pound limit for lightweight by 2.5 pounds. A similar miss to Davison Figueiredo a couple of weeks ago against Joseph Benavides. And while Figueiredo won that, even though he missed and gave up 30% of his purse to Benavides, Kevin Lee, you don't know where his mind is. Is he concerned about the virus? Is he concerned about depleting himself even more? You would think he was in the perfect spot, trying to make it 2 wins in a row under a new helm, the Firas Zahabi helm. And Firas is one of the greatest coaches in today's mixed martial arts scene. He, if you don't remember, he fostered and guided George St. Pierre in his run to multiple titles. And Firas praises Kevin Lee, his talents, his wits. And we saw what Kevin Lee did back at UFC 244 against Gregor Gillespie, a fight that nobody wanted. Kevin Lee demolished Gregor Gillespie and is now getting a huge fight in the co-owner of the most submissions in UFC history, Charles Oliveira, on Charles Oliveira's home turf in Brazil. And is Kevin Lee cracking under the pressure? Maybe. This extra worldwide back of everybody minds pressure in the virus is pressure. How much it affects everybody individually varies. But like I said earlier, Figueiredo, Davison Figueiredo, who knocked out Joseph Benavides after missing weight by 2.5 pounds. I think the opposite's going to happen with Kevin Lee. I think he's not completely focused. And Charles Oliveira is hot. He is on fire lately. We all know about the wins by submission, but Charles Oliveira has been knocking out people with his hands. And it's a tough matchup for both of them. What could be next for each of them is huge. They're knocking on the door of a top 5 fight in the UFC's lightweight division, a Shark Tank division, with the likes of Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, Dustin Poirier, Dan Hooker. It's a stacked division. And these guys could be moving into those waters with the win tomorrow in Brazil. So it's a huge fight. And I would not be surprised if Kevin Lee doesn't come out of Brazil with the W. The co-main event, Damian Maia, who shares the all-time submission record with Charles Oliveira, is facing Gilbert Burns, who is catching a bit of momentum himself. He has a huge win over Gunnar Nelson. He showed his fantastic grappling at Quintet 5 back in January, going against Jake Shields and Mark Munoz, a whole slew of bigger and more experienced grapplers. Gilbert Burns showed his skill, and people talk about his black belt, and he out-grappled Gunnar Nelson, who is a European champion in jiu-jitsu or grappling. And I believe Gilbert Burns can survive Damian Maia's grappling onslaught and avoid the submissions. I mean, if Damian Maia catches Gilbert Burns, it's a wrap for greatest grappler in mixed martial arts. More than Jacare, more than Charles Oliveira, Damian Maia. If he submits Gilbert Burns, he is the greatest submission artist in the history, and probably the greatest grappler in the history of the UFC and mixed martial arts. Gilbert Burns, on the other hand, if he can survive and outlast Damian Maia's grappling abilities and get into a place where he can insert his striking and his power, because he is better on the feet, much better on the feet than Damian Maia. If he can shrug off the takedowns of Maia and force the fight to be standing, that would be huge. But if Damian Maia, who knows Gilbert Burns, is going to know what he's going to try to do, if he can still drag the fight into his world and submit Gilbert Burns within the 15-round time limit, oh my goodness. It's a very exciting fight. And this card has a bunch of exciting fighters and fights, and I can't wait to see how Renato Moicano bounces back in Brazil, how Johnny Walker, the hype train of the century in the UFC's light heavyweight division, how he bounces back from his UFC 244 loss against Corey Anderson. It's a big card. A lot of pressure. Not too many fans. And I hope the UFC knows what they're doing, precaution-wise. You pray for the safety of all the athletes. I'm sure the UFC is thinking nonstop about what they're doing with flying in fighters. Is there a private jet for these fighters to fly in? Are they flying commercially? Is the UFC going to put them in the right spot to come to Vegas or go to their events and be safe? Something tells me Kevin Lee had the virus on the back of his mind and cutting that weight, and his mind maybe rattling a little just scared him away from making those 2.5 extra pounds. And you can't really blame him. It's a scary time. Everybody's getting sick with weak immune systems. You hear the virus attacking the elders, and somebody dropping 20 pounds in a week, depleting himself in a different country with different water and a completely different culture, is pretty scary as well. So I don't blame Kevin Lee, but it's exciting to see what this pressure does. And yeah, I love that the fights are on tomorrow, but more than anything, I care about the safety. You don't want to see a fighter get sick or somebody get really hurt because of money being the bottom line, but we will see. Again, thank you for downloading the Mind Body Soul podcast. Thank you for downloading the MMA Maverick podcast with Mike Strzok and I. And thank you guys for clicking Octagon.com and follow me on Twitter at Octagon, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. Thank you.